You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Happy Blue Friday to all of our listeners. Joining me for the show, as always, on Friday, my co-host Nick Lee. Today's episode brought your way by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code Locked On, and you'll get $10 off your next order. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Over the past several years, the Seahawks have had some pretty bad luck when it comes to the health of their top draft picks. We saw LJ Collier last year miss all of training camp for the most part, didn't play in any preseason games, missed the regular season opener. The year before that, Rashad Penny had surgery on his finger. He returned for week one, but he missed most of the preseason. Year before that, Malik McDowell gets in an ATV crash, never played a snap for the Seahawks. It's just been every year over like the last half decade that one of their top picks has an injury issue. And unfortunately, Nick, that trend has continued into 2020 with second round pick defensive end Daryl Taylor still weeks away from returning.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, obviously. And so to those who want to blame the training staff or whatever, this happened last season. It came out before he even got drafted by the Seahawks that he played most of 2019 with the Tennessee Volunteers with a stress fracture in his shin. And I don't know if anyone's ever had a fracture in their shin, but that's pretty darn painful. And then playing at a high level, he was probably one of the top two or three pass rushers in the SEC last year with the stress fracture in his shin. He had surgery. There was a titanium rod inserted into his leg. And so, you know, that's going to require a little bit of rehab. So it's not a super big surprise that he's not 100% ready to go. And obviously you want him to be ready for an NFL workload. It's one thing for Joe Schmuck and I to have this surgery and go back to sitting at our desk. Now it's at home working, you know, and that's one thing. But to do this and recover and then also be ready to play in the NFL for the first time in your career is a whole different ball game. You got to be NFL ready. And I think they're being very cautious. He's a second round pick. He's clearly one of their prized defensive pieces that they want to have around for 4 or 5 years. And they're not going to risk the first couple weeks of his career just because they want to get him out in the field and not look bad. Obviously this sucks, but I honestly think a lot of this, I understand that there's some fingers pointed at the training staff for some of the other issues with rookies in the past, and it's valid. But as far as this one and also Malik McDowell, I'm not comparing Daryl Taylor to that as far as like the stupidity of the injury, but just the unluckiness, the bad luck. That's just plain sheer dumb bad luck that the Seahawks have had with those two guys. And so it's unfortunate, but I think we'll see him on the field sooner rather than later, but it's probably going to be a little bit, and that's unfortunate.
Well, the comments that Pete Carroll made yesterday suggest that we might not actually see him on a field potentially until week 7. That's the downside of this, because right now Taylor is on the non-football injury list, and in short, it's called the NFI. And if he is still on the NFI when the Seahawks set up their 53-man roster on Saturday, he is going to be barred from practicing or playing in a game for the first 6 weeks of the season. That is league rules. And so based on what Carroll has said, it sounds like he's still a couple weeks away from being able to get on the field. If he didn't have that issue with the NFI list where he was able to return in week 3 or week 4, he probably could do it. They want to get him a couple weeks on the practice field before they get him out there to play in a game. And as Carroll mentioned, they're being patient with this because this is a rookie. You want to make sure that he's back to full speed before you throw him back on the field. You don't want him to be like 85%, 90%, and then end up suffering a new injury, re-injuring that area, because then you could potentially lose his entire rookie season. We saw what happened last year with LJ Collier missing the entire preseason and training camp and then only playing 200-something snaps the entire year on defense. It really stunted his development, and they're hoping he's able to bounce back. Now, they don't want a repeat there with Daryl Taylor. And as you said, you can't blame the training staff for this. This injury happened when he was at Tennessee. The Seahawks knew that he had surgery. And in fact, at the Senior Bowl, he was trying to play at the Senior Bowl with this injury. The kid is just a gamer. So anyone that's questioning where his head is at, and by the way, he just had a child that was born too. So he had a few days he was away from the team to add on to that. And obviously he should have been there for the birth of his child. And so he's had a lot going on. The Seahawks are still optimistic that Daryl Taylor is going to be able to contribute for them this year. They just brought back DeMontre Moore to give him an experienced player that has played in the scheme, has a motor, can maybe help them out some with the pass rush. So they have done some things here. Of course, there's that Jadeveon Clowney character that's still out there unsigned as well. And so there are moving parts here. They are still optimistic that they're going to get Taylor back at some point. It just might not be those first 6 weeks. And who knows, maybe they'll have some positive updates here in the next day or two and the Seahawks will decide, you know what, we're going to put him on the active roster. He's just going to be inactive for however many weeks. That way they can get him on the field as soon as possible. But if I had to hedge bets right now, I would think they're probably going to be cautious here because he's a rookie. They want to make sure he's okay. And I think that they're confident with the rushers they have, especially because his fellow rookie, Alton Robinson, has looked so darn good in training camp. And as Carroll said today, it's asking a lot out of a fifth rounder to play a big role as a rookie rotating in. But he has shown so far that he may be up for that challenge, and that may help them in this particular instance when they're trying to weather the storm until Daryl Taylor can get back out there and play.
Right, and it's not like Daryl Taylor playing week one will hinge the entire success of the pass rush. I don't think that's what we're looking at. And it sucks for him. It sucks for the Seahawks used a pretty high pick on him, and we probably won't see him for several weeks. Obviously, Saturday's roster decision will be very telling in how they view this injury. But like you mentioned, I was going to mention Alton Robinson. I think that he can step in nicely and fill that role as the rookie that could play an immediate impact. And that's a good problem to have once Daryl Taylor gets healthy. If Alton Robinson and Daryl Taylor all of a sudden turn out to be pretty good contributors later down the line, you want both of them humming as much as they can. So like you mentioned, the bringing in DeMontre Moore. And also, that's another reason why you bring in a guy like Ben Samioa and Bruce Irvin, guys that can step in, guys that have been there, done that. Because right now, I don't think it's critical mass that he's missing the first few weeks. Obviously, you want him in there. But I'm pretty optimistic that the Seahawks can make up the difference in what they have.
Yeah, I think Pete Carroll feels that way too. Obviously, they would love to have Daryl Taylor out there rotating. There's a reason they traded up to get him in the second round. They're excited about this kid, but that's the other reason that they're being patient, because they don't want to ruin him. You don't want to ruin his rookie season by being irresponsible and bringing him back before he's ready to go. And so, again, that's why I'm hedging bets that he's going to start the year in the NFI. Like Carroll said, that's a real possibility because he's not ready to go yet. They just have to see how things are going to go. Like you said, it's going to be very telling on Saturday with their roster decisions, what they choose to do. If he's there, if he's on that 53-man roster and they don't keep him on the NFI, then they have to believe he's a week or two away from getting back on the field and they can hopefully get him back in game action earlier in the season. If not, then you're going to have DeMontre Moore there, maybe Clowney. I mean, we don't know how any of this is going to play out. The next 24 hours or so is going to be crazy across the NFL because, as Carroll said, this is so different than normal this time of year. Usually you have hundreds of games of preseason film that your scouts can comb through looking at players from other teams. You don't have that this year. So it's just going to be a much different dynamic trying to construct that 53-man roster than it usually is in September. I'm very eager to see how things are going to play out. When we come back in the second quarter, speaking of 53-man rosters, yesterday, Rob and I, we delivered our last four in and last four out as far as bubble players on offense and defense. Nick, you and I are just going to expand that now, and we're just going to look at our final 53-man roster projections. We are going to start on the offensive side of the football in the second quarter. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
As an avid weightlifter and distance runner, I'm always looking for an edge when it comes to nutrition, seeking delicious, healthy protein bars without the crazy additives. Since being diagnosed with celiac disease, my options have been pretty limited, until now. Enter in the Built Bar, a low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, gluten-free protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Built Bar now comes in 18 mouth-watering flavors, including 6 new delicious flavors such as caramel brownie and cookies and cream. My all-time favorite is peanut butter brownie, which is 20 grams of protein, just 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. Since I had my first Built Bar, I never go without one when I hit the weight room or go for a jog. All Built Bars are 100% chocolate, nut and gluten-free, soft and easy to chew, and don't have the nasty aftertaste of competing protein bars. Sound too good to be true? Go to BuiltBar.com and build your own custom box with your choice of flavors using the code LOCKEDON for $10 off. You will also receive a free cooler with your first purchase while supplies last. So what are you waiting for? Change your workout game by going to BuiltBar.com and entering code LOCKEDON for $10 off.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Blue Friday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me, as always on Friday, Nick Lee. Nick, we finally are almost to cut down day. Tomorrow at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, the Seahawks will have to have their roster trimmed from 80 players to 53. The unfortunate reality of this business, there will be 27 players that are going to be sent home with a pink slip. Some of them will get a second chance with another team. Some of them will land on practice squads. Some of them will never play on an NFL field ever again. It's just the harsh reality of this business, as you're going to have a new crop of rookies coming in next year. That's just the reality. A lot of these guys, this was their chance to play on an NFL team in training camp, and now they're going to have to move on to other things. With that in mind, we're going to dish out our final 53-man roster projections. And Rob and I talked about this yesterday. It's not always about picking the 53 most talented players. You also have to look at your position groups, the depth that you have, age, experience, the contract the player has. All of these are factors that front offices have to consider. And I know you and I looked at this 53-man roster, and it wasn't just about, hey, can I just pick the 53 most talented players? Because if that was the case, I think you and I probably would have six or seven tight ends on our roster.
Yeah, I mean, that's just how deep some of the position groups are, and there is some imbalance with some of the positions, especially like you mentioned, tight end and wide receiver. The two pass catching groups, I think, are pretty darn deep, and that's a good problem to have. And now that we're kind of hearing more about the Seahawks wanting to open it up a bit more with Russell Wilson, I think that's indicative of that. So we'll get into that as well. And Corbin, of course, let's start with quarterbacks. I don't think there's any debate that the starting quarterback position is pretty safe for now in Russell Wilson. You know, 6-time Pro Bowler, maybe future Hall of Famer, certainly on that trajectory, and clearly the best quarterback in football at the moment. And, of course, the most interesting position in all of sports, the backup quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks with Russell Wilson at the helm, who will be holding the clipboard the entire year with how durable Russell Wilson has been throughout his whole career. And so, for me, Corbin, I'm just going to go Geno Smith here with the backup quarterback, just the familiarity with the system, the veteran move. Anthony Gordon did not necessarily impress in camp, especially when you don't have preseason games and don't have a lot of time and to work with as a rookie in the offseason this year. Unfortunately, he just didn't jump off the page. Danny Etling also has some experience, but I'm going to go with the most experienced one, Geno Smith.
Yeah, Geno Smith's been outstanding in training camp. This isn't even up for debate. You have your top two quarterbacks in Russell Wilson and Geno Smith. I do think in the year of COVID-19, and I'm not going to mention Anthony Gordon here because, honestly, he looked terrible in the couple mock scrimmages that they had. It's unfortunate because I think he has some potential. It's a really tough situation for an undrafted rookie that had never played on an NFL practice field, no OTAs or mini camps. Maybe still a guy that the Seahawks would have interest in putting on their practice squad. But Danny Etling has done some nice things in the couple weeks that he's been here. He's an underrated athlete. He had a play at practice yesterday during the open period where he made a linebacker miss in space and then took off for like a 25-yard gain. And that's one of those plays you just kind of drop, your jaw drops a little bit, like Danny Etling did that, but he is really an underrated athlete. And I think in a season like this where you could have something crazy happen and one of your quarterbacks gets COVID, I'm not saying it's going to, but you have to be prepared. I would be surprised if they're not going to keep Danny Etling around on their practice squad. I think that's the guy they would want to keep on that 16-man squad. And there might even be some consideration for keeping a third quarterback on the active roster that hasn't been the MO in Seattle. But again, this is not a normal season by any stretch of the word. Now the running back and fullback position. I talked about this yesterday in our Final Four out. Nick Ballore is a player because of his special teams value, certainly could still be on this roster, but I just don't think there's enough use for him on offense to justify keeping him, especially when you've got Chris Carson, Carlos Hyde, Travis Homer, and then, of course, the star of training camp, rookie DJ Dallas. You're going to have Rashad Penny coming back eventually. he's probably going to start the year in the PUP list. But by week seven, he's probably going to be back from a torn ACL. So you've got tons of talent there. You have some tight ends that can play fullback in a pinch. I just don't see any reason to keep Ballor. This one's very cut and dry. Those top four running backs, they are going to be on the roster on Saturday. And eventually Penny will come back. And if there's no injuries before then you're going to have some tough decisions to make. But for now, it's really easy. You keep those four guys and you go.
For me, it's a little harder than that because Nick Ballor does offer some value in special teams. Played almost 250 snaps in special teams last year. And really, it came down to a couple guys, the first four out. This is where it comes in for Nick Ballor. I got like Ben Burke-Kirvin. Those two were the guys I was kind of going back and forth on. Which one do I include? And for me, like we mentioned at the start, the position, the depth, the need, I think that if all things created equal and you had a equally good Nick Ballor and an equally good Ben Burke-Kirvin and special teams, you want Ben Burke-Kirvin just because he can play defense and he can play a more useful position and can probably get on the field a lot more. He probably won't start or, you know, play significant snaps ahead of, you know, like Jordan Brooks or anything like that. But as far as just looking at it from being useful and besides special teams, I'm going to go with Ben Burke-Kirvin on there. Those two were my first two out. And so Nick Ballor gets the axe there for me as well. And so, yeah, obviously Chris Carson, Carlos Hyde, DJ Dallas, Travis Homer, all pretty safe there. And really Nick Ballor, that was the one I really wring my hands with a little bit, but ultimately he gets the pink slip, which is unfortunate.
Let's talk receivers now. I think this is the most interesting group here now because Josh Gordon getting re-signed yesterday, even though he has yet to be relieved from the suspension list. He is still banned as of right now, but the Seahawks decided it was the time to make a move there. From what I've been told, any day he could be reinstated. So there's a chance that he's going to be active and available. At least he will be on the roster in week one. We'll have to see what happens in the next 24, 48 hours. But for now, he's not going to count against that 53-man roster because he's on the suspended list. And I'm keeping it that way for this projection. You've got a lot of names here. You've got DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, your starters. Those guys are obviously on the team. Philip Dorsett has returned from his sore foot. He should be okay for the start of the season. John Ursua is back. Freddie Swain has had a really good first training camp, and he can return kicks and punts, an electric playmaker. I think he has earned a roster spot as well. What really gets interesting here is you've got Paul Richardson, who just re-signed last week. And Paul Richardson, Carroll's admitted, they just didn't have enough time to really get a look at him. And that's not really fair to the player, but that might cost him a roster spot. And then you got David Moore, who's been playing better as of late. You've seen glimpses the last couple of years where he can be a really darn good receiver. And then he has a couple of games, he disappears. You just haven't had consistency from him. And he's going to cost you some money to hold on to on the roster. If you cut him, you can save a little over $2 million. There's no dead cap. And there are some players out there they may have interest in signing. Maybe they want to open up a little more financial flexibility. So I had to decide, do you pick a guy like Moore that you've had a chance to work with all training camp, you know what he's going to bring to the table, or Paul Richardson, who's an electric athlete that has three practices with you since he returned to the team, and you really haven't had a chance to see where he's at physically. I decided for now to keep Paul Richardson over Moore because he's more affordable. They're both on one-year deals, and I think that you're going to get the same downfield capabilities from both of them. So I decided Richardson. If Josh Gordon is activated, then Paul Richardson and David Moore might both get the axe because I think they really like John Ursua and they really like Freddie Swain.
That was a really hard decision for me as well. And for me, Paul Richardson is I think that unfortunately that's going to be it for him is he's going to get the axe just because, like you mentioned, Pete Carroll didn't get a good look at him. And he had a couple years, very underwhelming years with the Washington football team. And for me, it's availability. I know David Moore has not been let's be honest for a second. He's a seventh round pick. So it's not like he came in with all this prestige and, you know, blue chip prospects, but he's put up 746 yards in the last two seasons and seven touchdowns. And he's also played in all but two games in the last two seasons. And Paul Richardson's missed 15 or 16 games in the last two seasons. So he's just not been available. He's not been able to stay out of the training. He just hasn't been able to stay on the field. So for me, David Moore gets that spot because he's been more available. And frankly, in the last couple of years, he's been slightly more productive. I know that's not saying a ton. I just like the availability. I get the appeal of Paul Richardson. He did have that 700-yard season his last year with the Seahawks before he got paid. But, yeah, I like David Moore a bit more. I feel more comfortable with him. And the whole Josh Gordon thing, yeah, I think it's great that he's been back. I've been clamoring for it all offseason. And, yeah, he'll be on the – I imagine once the 53-man roster gets released on Saturday, he'll still be on that list, the restricted list. So that'll probably mean that he can be technically with the Seahawks but not count against 53-man. So as far as these projections go, he's going to be left off just briefly. Freddie Swain's had a good camp. I'm really excited to see what John Ursua is going to bring in year two. Obviously, DK Metcalf is drawing rave reviews in year two. I think he's going to have Corbin, an all-pro kind of season from DK Metcalf. So the receiving room is maybe one of the more exciting position groups in football, is the Seahawks wide receiver group, Tyler Lockett, of course, as well. So, yeah, the really interesting dilemma of Paul Richardson and David Moore will come down, I think, to the nitty-gritty.
That's going to be a really interesting decision for them to make, especially if Josh Gordon is activated here before the cutdown. Then you're being in a situation where you're like, I've got one spot and I've got three or four guys to choose from. And if Cody Thompson wouldn't have gotten hurt and missed an entire week, we might be having a discussion about his name being thrown in there. And unfortunately, I think him missing an entire week, being in the situation that he was at where he was on the bubble, that's going to put him on the wrong side. And he hasn't done much the first couple practices coming back either. He hasn't looked like he did the first week and a half. So unfortunately, both he and Penny Hart, maybe they can get back on the practice squad, but they are not going to be on the 53-man roster to start the season. Tight end, I think the first three pretty set in stone. Will Dissly and Greg Olsen are going to be your two starters at that position. Jacob Hollister, his ability to go to the outside, play slot, the most athletic tight end on their roster. He was number three in receptions and receiving yards in this team last year. They're not letting him go. There's a reason they put a second-round tender on him. Where it gets fascinating is that fourth tight end spot. I think they're going to keep a fourth tight end, but Luke Wilson, you know what you have in him. He has been a reliable player for you for a long time, but he's now on the tail and he's on the downside of his career. He's not going to get any better from where he's at now. Stephen Sullivan is dealing with a hip injury right now, but he started off camp looking pretty good. He's a high upside prospect. With Colby Parkinson likely to start the year on the NFI list, which means he's out the first 6 weeks too. I think Stephon Sullivan gets that last spot just because they aren't going to be able to sneak him to the practice squad. Tyler Mabry, the surprising undrafted player out of Buffalo, they certainly will be able to get to that 16-man practice squad, and so they can keep him around within the organization as well. But I think Sullivan ends up getting that fourth spot unless his injury is worse than what it sounded like from what Carroll said. If that's the case, he might end up on the injured reserve or something, and then Luke Wilson's on your roster.
And it could be a weird thing that for a while, Pete Carroll looked like he was a bit optimistic of Colby Parkinson being ready for week one. I'm not sure that they need to rush that. I don't necessarily get the urgency there, especially when you have one of the better tight end rooms in football, in my opinion, Greg Olsen and Will Dissly and Jacob Hollister. Stephen Sullivan is just a specimen. I think that he, once he gets healthy, will become a viable part of this offense, whether it's, you know, in the red zone or what have you. Maybe not even this season, but I think that he's certainly worth holding on to, and I don't think he's going to make – if he's healthy and cut, I don't think he's going to make it onto the practice squad. I think that someone would scoop him up pretty fast. Colby Parkinson, like I mentioned, probably should stay on the NFI list for now just because there's no reason to rush him. Luke Wilson, like I said, I've said that a few times now, that I think the Seahawks have outgrown Luke Wilson. It's not necessarily that he's a bad player. It's just the tight end room has gotten that much more talented, that much better, that much deeper, that Luke Wilson is all of a sudden being pushed out of the room. And that's just a compliment to how good this tight end group can be. And, of course, Tyler Mabry's in there. He made a couple nice plays in practice, but I don't think he's done anything to separate himself from the likes of Stephen Sullivan or Luke Wilson. But, yeah, so right now my tight ends are Greg Olsen, Will Dissly, Jacob Hollister. Now, I'm optimistic. I'm going to remain optimistic and have Stephen Sullivan be on the roster come Saturday.
Real quick, let's talk offensive line because it seems pretty set in stone to me. Pete Carroll said yesterday they have a starter at center already selected. I would think he was meaning Ethan Posick based on what we've seen at camp. BJ Finney has been very disappointing in his first training camp with the team. Oh, and there's that Justin Britt fella that was in for a second visit a couple days ago. I am still sticking with my guns. I think Justin Britt signs back with the Seahawks before tomorrow's cutdown. I would expect the news. It might even have broken before. We're recording this early. We might have some news here very shortly after this podcast is finished up. I think Justin Britt is going to be back in a Seahawks uniform because they are not happy with the state of that center position. So I've got Britt and Posick as my centers. BJ Finney, they're going to eat some money for this, but I think they're going to move on from him because I can't justify keeping him over Jordan Simmons and Phil Haynes, your two guards that are going to be the backups to Damian Lewis and Mike Iupati. They're both younger, and they are better physical fits for what the Seahawks want to do with the run game. Big body guys. BJ Finney just doesn't fit that. He's not a mauler. So I think the fact he didn't stand out in the center competition is really going to hurt him here. And then the tackle positions, Brandon Shell's been pretty good in camp so far. Dwayne Brown, obviously your best offensive lineman, the leader of that group. And then you've got Jamarco Jones and Cedric Ogbuehu, who's had a pretty darn good camp as a backup at both positions as well. So I think it's pretty cut and dry at the tackle positions. Maybe Tommy Champion or Chad Wheeler ends up on the practice squad. But the big cut of this group for me is BJ Finney. I just don't think he's done enough. And I think that at this point, the organization, the fact they've had two visits with Britt is pretty damning to me.
Yeah, the thing is, if it comes down to Justin Britt versus BJ Finney, obviously I think the Seahawks will agree to a deal with Justin Britt that would be less than they'll be in the green if they sign Justin Britt and release BJ Finney. I think that could happen. It's Justin Britt was owned, I think, almost $8 million before they cut him, and I think that they can sign him for far less than that, obviously, because they wouldn't have done that. Cut him if they didn't could afford it. So I'm right there with you. I think Justin Britt becomes part of this team pretty darn soon. BJ Finney, an unfortunate loss, because if you have Justin Britt playing center again, you have your Damian Lewis and Mike Iupati, two stalwart guards, or a proven veteran and a standout rookie. There's no really place for BJ Finney, and he'd be a very expensive depth piece, which you don't want on the offensive line. So unfortunately, yeah, I think he's in the red as well. And he's off this roster. And I've been impressed with Cedric Ogbuehu. I personally haven't been to practice, but just everything I've reading and what you've told me, Corbin, seems like he's impressing enough. I think he was on the bubble when we started camp, and I think he's firmly placed himself in the in category. And Phil Haynes is another. Phil Haynes and Jordan Simmons are also guys that if they can just stay at a training table, they can be really valuable depth pieces as well, and I think they'll make this roster. So my guys are Dwayne Brown, Mike Iupati, Ethan Posick, Damian Lewis, Brandon Shell, Jamarco Jones, Cedric Ogbuehu, Phil Haynes, and Jordan Simmons. So, and Justin Britt. So, I don't see a place for BJ Finney, unfortunately, as well.
When we come back for the third quarter, we're going to swing over to the defensive side of the football, see if there are any surprises on either of our 53-man rosters on the defensive side of the football. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Blue Friday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Nick Lee, busting out our final 53-man roster projections. A lot of people out there thinking it's 55 players. That's not the case. Each team will be allowed to promote two practice squad players to the roster each week, and there's a limit for how many times you can do that with a certain player before they have to be permanently moved to the active roster. So it is not a 55-man roster. It's still 53. There are some interesting perks to it. Some of you may have noticed that Nick and I both had 10 offensive linemen. There's a reason behind that, and it all has to do with the number of players you can have active. Under the new CBA, if you have 8 or more offensive linemen active on game day, you can increase your active roster total by 1 or 2 players. So you can have 1 or 2 other guys dressing, and that is a really big deal. I think a lot of teams are going to take advantage of it, and I think the Seahawks certainly will. Let's talk defense now. Defensive end position, right now, Rasheem Green and Benson Maioa would be my picks to start there. I do think Alton Robinson is knocking on the door a little bit there, and L.J. Collier is going to play some on the inside too. So he's going to get snaps at the base defensive end position. He's going to get snaps reduced inside as a three-tech defensive tackle rushing the passer on passing downs. Alton Robinson has played both defensive end positions, has been really impressive. And I said this yesterday. It's going to be crazy because for the last like 3 months, I've been saying the Seahawks are not going to get Jadeveon Clowney. But for this projection, I have DeMontre Moore getting cut because the Seahawks at the last minute with the clock about to strike midnight are going to swoop back in and they are going to get Jadeveon Clowney. I think the Saints being a true threat to sign him is going to make the Seahawks make one last push. And I think Clowney wants to be in Seattle. They're going to find a way to make it work. So that extra $2 million that David Moore gives you from cutting him is going to be very valuable when they bring back Jadeveon Clowney. So that's my big wrench in here. I've got Clowney being back on this football team, and maybe week one he doesn't start, but he's going to be in the lineup eventually.
Woo, coming in hot, Corbin Smith. I mean, obviously I'll take it, and that would be very Seahawk-like to wait until the 11th hour, wait until an NFC rival gets involved, and all of a sudden swoop in and crush everyone else's hopes. That would just be fantastic. I'm going to be a little bit more realistic and a little less through action green glasses. And I'll go defensive ends, of course, Rasheem Green, Benson Maioa, and I think LJ Collier, like you mentioned, will get some action. I'm feeling good about LJ Collier this year. I think that he's going to bounce back nicely. And Alton Robinson, like you mentioned, is impressed. And really, it's pretty awesome to think that here he is, a fifth-round pick, and without any rookie minicamps or anything like that, no preseason games, all of a sudden he's probably – your third best defensive end right now. And then Darrell Taylor will start on the NFI list more likely, probably definitely at this point. And I'm going to keep DeMontre Moore on there because I'm not going to sign Jadeveon Clowney, not because I don't want to. It's because I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm hoping I'm wrong. So either way, this could be a freezing cold takes meet for later. But DeMontre Moore, obviously very, very experienced, played with the Seahawks in 2016. He's got 56 games under his belt, 10 career sacks. So obviously he's got some experience getting after the quarterback, and you want a guy like that, especially with now all of a sudden with Darrell Taylor going down, a little less depth at defensive end. So that I really like DeMontre Moore there, but obviously Rasheem Green and Benson Maioa are your starters.
Let's talk defensive tackles now. Pretty obvious who the two starters are going to be: Jaren Reed and Puna Ford, both returning. They were starters last year. Jaren Reed is motivated to bounce back this year, and he told us the other day in a press conference that he's not in the excuse-making business. He knows he could have been much better last year than what he was, but missing the first six games really prevented him from getting in a rhythm, and he was pushing too much. He was trying too hard, and it impacted his performance. They're hoping for him to bounce back after giving him a two-year deal. This is the only year with guaranteed money on it, so he really needs to make 2020 count, and the Seahawks really need him to. Behind them, Brian Monet has had a really solid camp. He's down to a svelte 340 pounds. He was around 355, 360 last year. He is still a big, big man, but he gives them that nose tackle presence. He's looked much improved. So I've had no doubts that he's going to be on the roster. Where I've had issues is who's going to be the fourth guy, especially since they didn't go out and get any veterans. They were linked to Damon Harrison. They were linked to Marcell Dareus, but none of those guys have been signed. Instead, they brought in PJ Johnson, who has never played an NFL game either. DeMarcus Christmas hasn't. Cedric Lattimore, the undrafted rookie out of Iowa, hasn't. I've liked some things that I've seen from Lattimore. I can't put him on the roster. And I actually decided yesterday when I was putting all this together, based on what I'd seen, I think PJ Johnson has surpassed DeMarcus Christmas at this point. I've seen more flash plays from him, both as a run defender and a pass rusher in training camp and in the mock games. And he's now been with the team long enough that it's obvious to me he's a bigger body. He can play that nose tackle position, has more upside rushing the passer. So I'm going with PJ Johnson as my fourth defensive tackle. And unfortunately for DeMarcus Christmas, probably the best case scenario, getting on the practice squad, and they can continue to develop him.
This is one of our first big differences, I think, Corbin. I really struggled with the last defensive tackle position as well. I actually ended up going with DeMarcus Christmas. I think that, you know, them drafting him in the sixth round and then immediately going on the reserve pup list in August of last year really didn't get a fair shake. And I know that you are at practice more than I am because I haven't been at practice at all. So you've been watching, so I will defer to you as far as that. I respect that you probably understand PJ Johnson's made some impact, but I just think that they shouldn't give up on DeMarcus Christmas too soon. And you know, he played 51 games at Florida State, 10.5 tackles for loss, 105 tackles, pretty darn productive. Yes, I understand the lack of pass rushing ability, or at least the production at Florida State, that likely will continue in the NFL, but if you can get enough from the Jaron Reeds of the world and also the defensive ends and the Leos, that's not necessarily what you need DeMarcus Christmas to do. So I'm going to actually go ahead and give him that last defensive line spot. But, of course, I'm going to give, you know, Jaron Reed and Puna Ford their due. And Brian Monet, I've just heard really good things about him. Like you said, slimming down. And, you know, his slimming down is
How would you love to be like, hey, I've slimmed down. I'm down to 340. Like I said, he's still a big man, and he plays like a big man.
I'm a couple of trips from Golden Corral away from 340. But, I think Brian Monet makes the squad. I think that he's going to become the de facto Al Woods this year. But I'm going to go ahead and give that last spot to DeMarcus Christmas. I don't know. I got a feeling maybe I'm hoping too much, but let's see what we got in Christmas before we give up on him.
No drama at the linebacking group, at least on my end. I don't have any linebackers getting cut. All seven of them are making the team. Obviously, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, Bruce Irvin, your veterans, those are going to be your starters. Jordan Brooks is knocking on the door. He's looked much, much better, much more comfortable the last week or so. And as a first-round pick, he's going to be scratching and clawing to get on the field here sooner rather than later. So those four – easy picks. Cody Barton has looked much better the last week or so. Ben Burke-Irvin's had a good camp. And Shaquem Griffin, his ability to rush off the edge, he's the fastest guy they have in that regard. They're going to continue to find ways to get him on the field. He's such a good special teams player. I just don't see any way that they can cut any of those players. If they're going to, Burke-Irvin's the one that's on the bubble, but I'm still keeping him around because I think he's still a very solid linebacker and he's a really good special teams player.
Like I said, when we were talking about Ballore, it really came down for me between Ballore and Kervin for that last spot. And like I said, if you need an extra linebacker, you need an extra linebacker more often than you need an extra fullback in today's NFL. So that's really why I went with Ben Burke-Irvin. And he's at a good camp. When we all started this, it seemed like he was going to have a really hard time making this roster. But all of a sudden, you know, he comes in clearly wanting to make a statement, and he has. And so as long as he can continue to make an impact on special teams, Ben Burke-Irvin will have a spot. So I, too, have every linebacker making this team. I'm really excited for this group. Jordan Brooks, I think, is going to be a stud. And everything I've read, everything I've seen says that he's been as advertised. So Shaquem Griffin, I think if they can find more roles for him like they did against the Eagles and the Packers in the playoffs, I think he'll do just fine. He could carve out a decent career doing that.
All right, corner position. Go into the secondary. Shaquem Griffin, Quentin Dunbar, Trey Flowers. You've got Dunbar and Flowers still entrenched in a battle for that right cornerback spot. I've been leaning more lately that Dunbar is going to be able to get in there, but now that training camp's over, he had to miss yesterday's practice attending a funeral, and Trey Flowers missed a practice last week being injured. So it's just really been back and forth. Who knows what the Seahawks are going to end up doing when they travel to Atlanta. But we know all three of those guys are going to be on the roster. Uguamadi isn't going to get a lot of chances on defense right now with Marquise Blair emerging at that nickel position. He's been so good in camp. But Amadi is safe on this roster because he's a very good special teams player. He can play the nickel. He can play safety in a pinch if need be. So he's going to be there. They're keeping him around. And I have Nico Thorpe. He was one of my last four players in this final projection. He has had a really solid training camp. He looks healthy. Is he a little older player? Absolutely. But they love him in the locker room. He's such a great asset on special teams. And so I absolutely think Nico Thorpe gets that last spot. I did give some consideration for a couple of their younger guys. Da'Beon Renfro is a player that I would like to see Seattle keep on the practice squad because he's made some plays in camp. He's also given up quite a few, but he's certainly shown some potential, and he's got the body and athleticism they like at that corner position. I just don't think he's done enough, though, to beat out Nico Thorpe. Ryan Neal's played some safety and corner. Maybe he's a player under consideration, but I think Thorpe gets that fifth spot.
Yeah, no drama at the top, certainly. Griffin, Flowers, Dunbar. The position battle between Dunbar and Flowers will not result in one of them getting cut, for sure. Nico Thorpe, special teams ace, no problem. I actually battled a little bit with Lyndon Stevens and Uguamadi a little bit, and I eventually went with Amadi just because of the special teams, the versatility. He certainly didn't jump off the page like Marquise Blair did in that slot corner position, and Lyndon Stevens was a bit attractive for that experience that Uguamadi didn't have, but eventually I did go with Amadi over Stevens. So that was a tough decision. And it's Nico Thorpe is one of those guys who's good. Like you mentioned, in the locker room, you want to have guys like that around. But I think this group is going to be pretty solid with it. Trey Flowers can be that kind of quote swing corner. If he loses the job to Dunbar, whoever loses that position will be the de facto swing corner and really, really solid option as the backup corner. So no arguments there.
Now swinging to the last two positions on the depth chart, the free safety and strong safety positions. I think Seattle's got a pretty darn good duo there now with Quandre Diggs and Jamal Adams. Pretty safe to say they're going to be on that 53-man roster. Marquise Blair has been fantastic in the nickel, can still play both safety positions, so he is a lock for this football team. And I'm pretty confident Lano Hill is safe too, because Lano Hill can play special teams. He's really solid at strong safety as well. Just don't put him back as a single high safety. That is not his game, and he has shown that. He just doesn't have the movement or covered skills to play back there. But I think entering the last year, his contract, he is going to make the team. I gave some consideration for undrafted rookie Chris Miller, as well as Ryan Neal, who can play corner on the outside as well. Ultimately, I think they're most comfortable with Lano Hill because of his special teams ability and being a box safety. He's a good backup to have for Jamal Adams. So I think they keep him around. Pretty safe picks here, but Ryan Neal maybe has a chance because of his versatility. Miller maybe with OTAs and mini camps could have made this team, but just didn't see quite enough to have the undrafted rookie on the 53.
I don't think there's much mystery here. I think your four safeties are Quandre Diggs, Marquise Blair, Jamal Adams, and Lano Hill. I think that those guys, excuse me, especially the starters, Diggs and Adams, one of the better safety duos in the NFL. I mean, plain and simple. Marquise Blair has just emerged as one of the more versatile defensive backs in on the Seahawks, and maybe is the most versatile outside of Jamal Adams. That's really a nice, probably one of the better feel-good stories of camp is just the emergence of Marquise Blair. So I guess, Corbin, with that, there's no mystery there for safety. We're not going to discuss the heated Tyler Ott or Michael Dixon. Perhaps, I don't know, are they on the bubble or are they okay?
I think we're pretty good on specialists. They haven't brought anybody in. They didn't bring Steven Hauschka back to compete against Jason Myers. So they're confident with Myers kicking field goals as well. So we know who the three specialists are going to be. There are certainly some position groups. It's going to be fun to watch. Receiver on offense, tight end. They've got some interesting decisions at the bottom of the depth chart. Maybe the offensive line with B.J. Finney, some of those guys there that are competing against each other. On defense, we don't know what happens with Clowney. That would be the biggest wrench to be thrown into this entire process, and I decided to throw it in favor of the Seahawks. We'll see what happens here in the next few days as these NFL rosters are trimmed from 80 to 53 players. Make sure to follow me on Twitter, @CorbinSmithNFL. You can follow Nick at NickLee51. Subscribe to our show, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on Monday, can't believe I'm saying this, but it's time to start prepping for the first game week of the season in Atlanta. We'll break down which players got cut, which ones made the team, and take a first look at the Atlanta Falcons. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Stay safe, stay healthy, wear a mask. Go Hawks.